here with this week's hottest stories in the investment world. This is Zach's Friday Finish Line.
Hello and welcome back to the Zach's Friday Finish Line. As always, I am Ryan McQueeny, an associate stock strategist here at Zach's, joined by one of our editors, Maddie Johnson.
I feel like maybe we should like switch up one day and go with like new names.
Yeah, or we could just switch.
I'm just kidding.
We could just switch the like which name comes first.
Oh, really throw people
same,
off.
Same way.
Anyways.
I'll introduce you and then you introduce me, or we could do, we'll work on it.
We'll work on it.
Yeah, we could do something.
Yeah, anyways, it's been a crazy weather week here in Chicago. So much rain. But today is Friday, June 22nd, and we're here to recap this week's biggest stories from the investment and financial world. A lot of news out there in the pop culture world, and then on the political side, obviously the national tension has been firmly planted on some relatively discomforting headlines from our southern border. And we will do our best to keep you filled in on the news from our neck of the woods, though.
Yeah, so in our neck of the woods, it's obviously been an exceptionally busy week. And we're going to try a slightly different format, still kind of the same idea here. But instead of our usual 3 to 4 stories where we kind of dig in a little bit deeper, we're going to just fly through a bunch of news, keeping things informative but brief so we can touch on as much as possible. I just think when we were looking at what to cover this week, there was so many of these like little fun stories with our favorite companies that we would typically cover, and trying to cut it down like 3 or 4, it just wasn't going to happen. So we're going to do a bunch.
I love it. Speaking of pop culture, though, Johnny Depp's interview with Rolling Stone is the definition of wild.
Johnny Depp's still doing Rolling Stone interviews?
I encourage everyone to read it. It is amazing. If you haven't already, if you haven't heard snippets of it, they had snippets on Good Morning America.
Oh, goodness.
It's like this could take up an entire episode of just discussing Johnny Depp's interview. it is really truly out there. So yes, today's going to be a real news roundup speed round, and we're going to kick things off with an update on a story we've been following for a few months now.
Yeah, so this week Disney announced its new $70 billion offer for an array of 21st Century Fox assets, outbidding Comcast's unsolicited deal from a couple weeks ago and its own initial offer. Of course, just remember here, Fox and Disney entered into a definitive agreement, $52.4 billion all-stock agreement back in December. And then last week, Comcast offered roughly $65 billion in an all-cash offer to acquire the same Fox assets. The new bid from Disney was a mix of cash and stock, and Disney and Fox have now entered into a new agreement again. These assets, if we will recall, include the 20th Century Fox Film and TV Studios. So just as a reminder here, the 21st Century Fox is what the name of the overarching company is now and has been since the 21st century began.
Mm-hmm.
But they kept the name of the TV studio primarily and also movie studio. They continued calling it 20th Century Fox. So slightly confusing, but it's
okay.
Essentially just think of it as the main movie and TV studio there. And then it's going to include the cable networks such as FX, and then the regional sports channels. So like Fox Sports Detroit and Fox Sports Seattle. I don't even know if that one actually exists, but those little things. Two major satellite distributors, it's Sky in Europe and Star in India, and then Fox's 1/3 stake in Hulu. And, you know, if this works its way out like it looks like it's going to, where Disney wins the bidding war here, that gives Disney a majority stake in Hulu, I think 66% or roughly 2/3, something like that.
Okay.
And then, of course, you know, the other kind of headline here, the subplot going on now is the legal hurdles the companies will have to go through to get the deal approved. But kind of looks like the regulatory environment is a little bit easier now because of the whole AT&T Time Warner thing. And as we discussed, when that went through, it seems like that deal really informed whether this deal will get approved. So
yeah, but it's also like, do we need another deal like this?
Yeah, no. And I don't think I didn't see many ecstatic reactions to AT&T Time Warner going through spotless.
But I almost like, I know the federal judge, like a federal judge approved the AT&T Time Warner, but I'm wondering if...
Much to the chagrin of many people.
Yeah, but I'm wondering if a federal judge will approve another huge media merger like this. Like they did, like the AT&T Time Warner, that was like an $80 billion and not like, you know, so it's, I feel like that one's almost, I don't know which one is bigger, but it's like, do we need, I wonder if another big one will get approved.
It's just the frustrating thing about the frustrating thing for many people about the AT&T Time Warner thing is that when you build if the government wants to build a legal argument as to why it shouldn't go through and then it goes to a judge, the judge has to look at precedent that's been set. And so the precedent of the AT&T Time Warner deal now kind of speaks for itself, especially the fact that it literally went through with like no restraints whatsoever. So like they get to just do it straight up. Whereas, you know, we've discussed off the show, like maybe through the regulatory process, Disney will have to shed some of this stuff. Maybe not all of this is going to come through. Maybe a Hulu has to get sold off to someone else to make this go through. But who knows? And I'm not a lawyer, so I don't even have any idea how these things work. and we got to move on because we got a lot of headlines here. Yeah. And one has to do with what's called a struggling company.
Yeah, so General Electric GE, they were the last original company from the first 1896 Dow Jones Industrial Average. They're no longer part of that 30 stock index. So after 110 years, GE was booted off the Dow this week, and they'll be replaced by Walgreens. Walgreens Boots Alliance, WBA.
That's my favorite. That's my favorite company name. I think I mention it every time we say it, but that's my favorite company name.
But GE, they've been struggling recently, and many believe that this change will have a positive impact and make the index a better measure of the economy and the overall stock market. But still, the move is yet another ugly mark for GE, a once iconic, like hashtag iconic American brand that seems to be carrying less clout than ever before. Shares are down over 55% over the past year, and the conglomerate is desperately scrambling to shed sluggish assets and control its debt issues. I know, well, they have a new CEO, so it's like, you know, still trying to get back on track, but this is definitely a big hit.
110 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was looking at some of the history in the first few Dow indexes. The GE was off and on it, so they weren't even like weird thing, but they were on the original. And you know, I was looking at the other companies that were, I think it was 12 originally.
It's like Standard Oil, or wasn't it one of them?
Yeah, basically all of them either got bought by something else, which then got bought by something else, which then got bought by something else, or they folded, or you know, they renamed and are now operating as something else.
I think
entirely.
One of them was like a railroad company. I mean, clearly it was 1896, so yeah. There wasn't like a big tech company
then. It was like
then.
Tobacco and railroads and rubber and oil and electricity stuff. Yeah. So
it's what mattered back then.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It did look like, okay, this is like 12 things that really would help you gauge how the economy is
absolutely
doing.
Yeah.
But it was just interesting to see how all of their different trajectories went, and then we still had General Electric.
Just pumping along.
Yeah, well. And
not
now,
anymore. kind of.
Yeah. Speaking of pumping along, though, us on this episode.
With syrup.
Moving to Starbucks. Starbucks, shares of Starbucks sunk sharply on Wednesday after the coffee retailer issued sluggish comps guidance and said it would close more than 150 U.S. stores in fiscal 2019.
Well,
Starbucks has historically closed about 50 stores per year on average, so its new plan is thrice as many, I believe, is the way to triple that.
That's
the
correct.
Affected stores are located primarily in urban areas that are already densely populated with other Starbucks locations.
Literally one on every corner.
Yeah. So, like, you know, some of the places where you can stand at the Starbucks front door and see two other Starbucks is maybe now it's just going to be one other Starbucks. So these ramped up closures, are just kind of one piece of a larger shift for Starbucks stores. We learned more about this with the huge announcement that came out that included these details, but it's really the company is now focusing on underpenetrated markets, slowing its licensed store growth, doubling down on the roastery and reserve concepts, and we've talked about that on the show, and investing more in U.S. digital efforts. That's the mobile app. That's the rewards program. Mm-hmm. That's all of that fun stuff. But investors really just weren't excited about this at all. The store closures and then also management saying it expects comps growth of just 1% for the current quarter. One thing to note here is this current quarter included the day that about 4,000 stores closed for racial bias training. Mm-hmm. Starbucks' CEO brought up the fact that that happened and did have an effect, was careful to say, of course, not an excuse, but it's going to have a slight impact on comps guidance when thousands of stores are closed for a day. So something to note there.
I was also reading that Frappuccino sales are down because people now realize that there's 1,000 calories in one Frappuccino.
They're going to healthier
and
drinks.
It's all about health and wellness now. So, but you know, people still like iced coffee and regular coffee at Starbucks.
Yeah.
Anyways.
I think they're trying to do more of the like healthier teas.
Yeah. They have their
like
Mercado
that.
Lunches too. And those are, you know, fairly healthy lunch options. But if you want, you know, mixed like coffee, like drinks, like your mochas and your lattes and like your caramel macchiatos, those are not healthy.
No.
It's all the syrups, like I mentioned, and that's a lot of sugar.
And are you ready for this segue?
Yes.
Speaking of delicious treats that are not particularly healthy, but taste really good.
Brownies.
People have the munchies this week in Canada especially
because
it worked.
Canada
okay, it was
legalized
a good transition.
Pot.
Yes, it did.
So the country will become the only the second nation in the world to permit a nationwide recreational cannabis market after its Senate approved a historic legalization bill this week with a vote of 52-29. Those 29 senators.
Losers.
Just like, probably never partook and just.
Yeah. Okay, nerds. No, I didn't leave it in the notes because I wanted to quiz you. Do you know what the other nation that has a nationwide recreational cannabis law? The only one.
Where's Amsterdam?
That doesn't count because it's not technically nationwide. It's only in. No.
Is it in Europe?
Okay, no,
just
it's
tell
not in
me.
Europe.
This
it's
is going to take
Uruguay.
Too long. Interesting.
Yeah,
I never would have guessed that.
Yeah, no. I didn't know until this week either. So, but yeah. So there's the more you know, you learn something new every day.
The more you, I just that gif rainbow. The more you know. Okay, so the so-called Cannabis Act faced a lengthy legislative process. Having first been introduced back in April 2017 and passing through the House of Commons in November, so provinces and territories, which will be responsible for creating their own rules on marijuana sales, said they would have, they said they would need 8 to 12 weeks after approval to properly transition. So once the bill is fully implemented, Canadian adults will be able to hold, and this is key, 18 plus. Mm-hmm. Will be able to hold up to 30 grams of legal cannabis in public, cultivate up to 4 plants in their homes, and manufacture edibles for personal consumption. Stocks to watch include 2 Canadian medical pot companies trading on American exchanges. Cronos Group trades under the ticker CRON, and Canopy Growth, CGC, is their ticker.
Yeah, Cronos was the first to come down to an American exchange via the NASDAQ. Canopy Growth trading on the New York Stock Exchange. That was the second one, I believe.
Yeah, a lot of the big Canada or Canadian pot stocks, if you will, they trade on over-the-counter market markets. So it's hard to, it's difficult to trade them. It's just not as easy.
Yeah, and the coverage, it's you know, the challenges of the over-the-counter stocks are definitely a plenty. But they do, I don't understand the law, I guess, but they are able to trade more freely up there in Toronto on the Toronto exchanges. And you know, these are, to clarify, medical marijuana companies. Currently, Canada has had a medical marijuana system federally for some time now. And so the idea here is that since you already have the infrastructure, if you will, and the distribution channels, the pivot to recreational marijuana should be relatively easier. That said, you know, you'd have to expect maybe some of these companies don't want to do it, or the costs are too much, or they just want to stay with the medical side of things.
Yeah.
Because as we've seen with U.S. states that have gone, that have legalized recreational marijuana that already had medical systems, the medical system doesn't go away. It still operates basically the same way.
Mm-hmm.
The taxing of it is different. The amounts in some cases that you can get are different. Those types of things. So I would presume that the medical system will still continue on. It's just like this whole new market is going to open up as well.
Just a quick note. So there are American companies and American stocks that are like pot adjacent or weed adjacent, if you will.
Quote,
they're just
unquote,
like
pot stocks.
Pot stocks. There are a lot of biopharmas and randomly Scott's Miracle-Gro, SMG. But the thing is, the trick is they're not, it's not like true cannabis or cannabinoid products. It's synthetic cannabinoids.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how they can get away with it because it's still illegal in the U.S.
And another play, and this should continue to grinding, all of these really should continue to grow as legalization goes further down the line. But another way to play this would be to look at REITs that are specifically trying to own and kind of manage properties that are cultivating medical marijuana. So another kind of like
big grow houses, basically.
Yeah, another roundabout way to get to the marijuana industry in terms of investing exposure. But we've seen these REITs crop up where they're like, okay, well, we literally, grow houses would be the term, I guess.
Yeah.
And we'll buy a bunch of those and license those and then, you know, take our little fee and pay our big dividend. And that's that.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Moving on here, we've got some news from Instagram.
Love Insta.
Yeah. So Instagram hit 1 billion users, we learned. And then also launched a new feature in its app, plus a standalone app. It's called IGTV. So within the new app, users are able to watch long-form vertical videos. Key there is, I think, like phone. It's mobile focused.
So instead of like flipping your phone horizontally,
It's mobile focused. From you know, video, their favorite content creators will be up there. And they can also post their own videos, so you can become your next new favorite content creator yourself. And the key here is that the videos can be up to an hour long. The old Instagram video, the regular Instagram video, can only be 60 seconds. So we're talking about long-form content versus short-form content. And that obviously creates a lot more possibilities for the type of content that can be there, types of shows, the types of creators that would be interested in doing it, but it also is basically targeting a very specific platform that already exists called YouTube. You may have heard of it.
Maybe. I don't know.
So, yeah, and I would also say in terms of being mobile focused, the Snapchat Discover feature is very similar, especially in terms of like the vertical video format. Yeah, Facebook's Instagram entity this week, definitely putting Snapchat and YouTube in its crosshairs this IGTV.
The first notification for an IGTV video I got was from Kim Kardashian, naturally. It was within...
I will be watching
clearly
that.
Clearly watched it. It was within the app, though. I haven't downloaded the actual app, because maybe I will, but if I can watch it within the app.
Yeah, if I can find reasons to not download an additional application, I do. And I have the little, now I have the button on the top right corner of my IG app, and I can just go to that.
Exactly,
that way.
It's perfect.
I think it's pretty cool, though. Right now, they're not running ads on it.
Yeah, I think they will in the future.
Definitely, definitely. They're, I think, like, they're, if, just like,
any way they can monetize,
they're
something,
gonna
they're going to
trick us into using it a bunch.
I mean, they are, exactly. Moving on to some new news in online retail. SCOTUS, the Supreme Court, reversed a 1992 ruling on Thursday that allowed states to impose taxes on only brick-and-mortar businesses within the state.
I like that you just dropped the SCOTUS.
SCOTUS.
I love that in a sentence.
I also like to say FLOTUS, too, for the First Lady of the United States.
Yeah, definitely.
It doesn't apply here, but so prosecutors believe that this specific law allowed businesses to avoid a physical presence in states, and ultimately the justices agreed that the current laws were outdated. So this obviously is going to have an impact on online marketplaces like Amazon, eBay, Etsy, and Wayfair, although these platforms already have their own tax policies in many cases. But for example, Amazon collects state and local taxes in all states where they apply purchases of its goods. The company will likely now have to ensure that third-party merchants are also collecting taxes on its platform.
Mm-hmm.
So when I heard the news, I was like, I'm imagining like my, like the local huge furniture store in my parents' hometown, just being like, yes, like, thank God, like,
Wayfair,
suck it, Amazon and Wayfair, like, you're gonna have to like pay the same, basically enforce the same tax rules as we do.
Yeah, it's just I just feel like it, first of all, okay, so we clearly know about the news because we heard it and we covered it.
Yeah.
And I just wonder how long of a process it will be before people even really realize what's going on.
Probably not. I mean, I feel like potentially for us, because we have such high tax.
Yeah. And I just, yeah, that's true. That's
but
very
in
true
other
Illinois.
Places, when the tax isn't that great,
yeah,
there may not be much of a difference in the total.
Are people still going around saying, like, yeah, I use Amazon all the time because I can skirt those sales taxes? I feel like that's not really what's cool about it anymore.
No.
It's especially since Amazon charges taxes on
their own
goods.
Items.
So, yeah. So a lot.
But not on third-party stuff. So
sure. But a lot, some stuff that you would interact with, especially in the furniture side of things, as we've said, like Amazon, for better or worse, has launched its own furniture line.
Yeah.
And, like, so that would be something it would be collecting.
Yeah, but not on any of the other furniture on Amazon.com.
So especially, and that's a big thing, too, is, like, these, a lot of, like, name brand merchants, like, merchants that you would recognize from elsewhere have these Amazon shops now, and they can, not only is the convenience of Amazon there still, mm-hmm. but then also, I don't pay the sales tax that I would if I went into the store. Now I'm going to have to. I guess it will be interesting to see how the enforcement of this plays out.
Yeah.
And it'll come down to the states each deciding how they want to do it, I would presume. eBay, Etsy, Wayfair, Amazon, those likes. Affected by SCOTUS this week. I wanted to get another SCOTUS in there. All right, we're going to wrap things up here. Micron reported earnings this week, another little company you might have heard of
that we may have covered
on the show before, posted non-GAAP earnings of $3.15 per share that beat the Zacks consensus estimate by a penny, just a smidge. Revenue was $7.8 billion. That edged our consensus estimate of $7.75 billion. Total revenue up 40% year over year. Big story to come out of the report, though, is the cash situation over there at Micron. Operating cash flow for the quarter was almost $4.3 billion, up from about $2.4 billion last year. Micron also repurchased or converted about $2.3 billion worth of its own debt, lowering its total debt load to $7.34 billion. And that meant, considering the company's nearly $7.7 billion in cash and cash equivalents, it ended the quarter in a net cash positive position. In other words, it has more cash equivalents, and investments than it does debt on the books.
Nice.
So that's a good place to be in terms of financial stability. Management also said that it envisions current market conditions to continue over the next few quarters at the very least. And its analyst conference call included several encouraging notes about the continued potential of the of cloud computing, the potential of AI, and more of these secular trends that we're looking for to continue Micron's incredible growth cycle, not just for the next few quarters, but for the next few years and on. A lot of the hashtag haters out there like to say that Micron's run is nearly up, and I guess we'll still see, but they always like to, the management always likes to drop those tidbits in the conference call about why they've still got some running left to do here. So, wow, that was a lot of stories. Is that a new record for stories that we covered in one episode?
During the non-earnings season, I think so.
Yeah, true. When we just run, it's cheating when we run through those earnings reports. But yeah, a lot of stuff going on Wall Street and elsewhere. Busy week. Thank you guys for tuning in. As a reminder, shoot us an email at podcast@zacks.com. If you feel like we missed anything, I really hope we didn't miss anything with that, but
I think we got it covered.
Or if you want us to cover a different story in an upcoming episode, also remember that you can check out all of our other exclusive audio content at zacks.com/podcasts. Subscribe and leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts, please. They just launched a new Google Podcasts app. I haven't been able to use it yet, but if you are a fan of Google Podcasts, it's like built a new podcast app over their existing like Android podcast structure. So let us know if you're tuning into our stuff through there. That would be cool to know how that user experience is like. Yes, I guess I'm a podcast nerd at this point. You can also find us on Spotify. Search Zach's Investment Research there, and you'll be able to find all of our shows. Thank you, as always, for joining us, and we will see you next time on Zach's Friday Finish Line.